Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber, live from separate locations. Futures are red. Markets digesting jobless claims, that Twitter hack. Big earnings from J&J, Morgan Stanley. We'll talk to James Gorman later on this hour, along with Laxman Narasimhan of British conglomerate Reckitt Benckiser, maker of Lysol. Jim, heard you talking with Becky a moment ago about how you're not that impressed with some of the pre-market action today.
Yeah, look, I think that the futures stay down no matter what happens. We get a great report from Morgan Stanley, which we're going to hear. It doesn't matter. Johnson & Johnson, better than expected. It doesn't matter. Abbott Labs, complete blowaway. It doesn't matter. Taiwan Semi last night, fantastic. Doesn't matter. Apple price bump, doesn't matter. Amazon. And when you get like that, that just says, okay, look, let the sellers get their job done. There's some agenda here. They're obviously not caring about news. They're not reacting to better retail sales, which I thought was terrific, or even jobless claims down again. Every time that happens, there's usually a great trend up. But someone's a seller. When I say someone's a seller, there is big money that wants out right now. I think a lot of people are very confused about what's going on. NASDAQ, Amazon down 10% since the week began. So consequently, there's no bid underneath, no matter what the companies say. That will change probably midday. I think it's an okay day.
All right. We'll see, Jim. Obviously, we talk about the market looking forward through some of the news flow. And, you know, you take some of the bank commentary about second half growth versus first half. It's not nearly as constructive. And we'll see whether Gorman backs up what Citi and Wells and J.P. Morgan have said this week.
Well, look, I do think, and David, you got to chime in on this, that the losses sure are far lower than expected. And yet there's a kind of a ennui. I mean, each bank has been saying, you know what, we just went through the greatest stress test in history and we came out with flying colors. And flying colors is equal to a down 1-2% for all of them. That's not what I would have expected. People just do not like this group, David, and they are still not giving anybody their due. James Gorman, whole new model, much higher, much less risk, 9x earnings. What? Well, why?
Well, I think in part it's got to be that people don't expect anywhere near the level of financing activity that we saw in the first half of the year. And certainly in that condensed period from, let's call it, mid-March or late March until end of June. Jim, you know, you just can't maintain that, or can you? I mean, how many companies are going to need to go back to the equity and or debt markets to raise more money? We see Norwegian filing for another $250 million worth of stock. But, you know, there's that. So it's seen as perhaps a one-off. There's still a lack of M&A activity. And here I'm talking more about, you know, the likes of Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley that do rely a lot on that, J.P. Morgan to a lesser extent and some of the others. So there's that, and then there's just the concern about continued reserve builds that are going to need to happen given the uncertainty out there, given the rising caseloads in so many states and the prospect of potentially future closures or at least lack of economic activity or lessening of economic activity.
Well, I think, Carl, those of us, we all bank at different places. Bank of America, it's been so easily digitized. Isn't it terrific? It's like PayPal. No. It doesn't matter that Moynihan has come up with the digital bank. Goldman Sachs, unbelievable. What they've been able to do is be able to make it so that they just have a giant wealth management business that doesn't have a lot of risk, and they did great in M&A. No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they do. Bank of America, the style this quarter wasn't that bad. It's not worthy down 3. Michael Corbat did a pretty good job at Citigroup. Charlie Scharf was the only, Wells Fargo, the only bank that was really bad. But you know what? These trade as if there is one bank. It's JGBCW. What do I come up with? It ain't FANG. I'll tell you that much. There's no FANG here. And I just, I worked on these banks. I'd be like, wow, what do we have to do? I mean, any ideas?
Again, Jim, it goes back to what they've said on the calls this week. Wells, Our view of the length and severity of the downturn has deteriorated considerably. Citi, the pandemic has a grip on the economy, and it doesn't seem likely to loosen, not to mention the data that just that David just mentioned, 31 states with rising caseloads records, states getting religion on masks, governors, at least some of them. That's what maybe the market's keying on, don't you think?
Yes. And I think that what we have to try to do as people who interpret the news and report the news is decide shine some light on the bank executives who have tried to deal with that head on. 10 years, Gorman, 10 years, and we're going to be hearing from him, has made it so that he is not one of those banks, that his bank is a flow of fund, not credit risk bank, and no one cares. We have to start distinguishing, because this is not just this ETFization. I'm not saying that I Star Spangled Banner for Morgan Stanley, but I mean, they're not doing it the same way. We have to stand up and pay attention to that, because that bank should not be valued as low as it is. And when we ask Gorman, we have to try to figure out whether he himself just says, I don't know. I throw up my hands, buy an E-Trade, make it so we don't have a lot of credit risk. I guess it doesn't matter. Because if you're at PayPal right now, you're saying we're $200 billion going to $400 billion. If you're Morgan Stanley, well, what are you saying? Well, or Goldman Sachs, we're $77 billion and we're going to $77 billion. How is this possible?
All right. But Jim, does the lack of response to what has been largely positive numbers from the banks, and I'm excluding Wells Fargo from that, does it reflect more broadly in terms of what we can expect in the market? Is it a reflection of the economy overall? Can we expect to see that kind of sentiment is starting to creep into other areas? Or are they just going to continue to be this group that is penalized because of concern about the future, concern about, you know, things like their ROEs and their capital retention? And the election. And I mean, you can throw in a lot of different things. Or is it a sign of what may be coming?
I think it's more of the former, not the latter, because other than Jamie Dimon did have this, you know, a gripping moment where he basically just says, we don't know what's going to happen. And therefore, that gives you a 12 multiple as soon as you say that. But I just think that some of these banks have worked very hard to not look like what they used to be. And nobody cares. And will one day people care? You know, something.
Sure.
I have to believe they will. I have to believe that you cannot. Look, Kellogg used to trade with General Mills, which used to trade with Kraft. Then they became differentiated, and suddenly they don't trade together. Kraft upgraded today, but I don't know why. I think it's just because the others have just broken out. We happen to have a company today, David, Reckitt Benckiser. They make Lysol. Well,
yes.
All of a sudden, they're worth a hell of a lot more than a company that makes Cornflakes. So there is differentiation occurring in some groups.
There is.
Jim,
and hopefully the governor of Georgia won't not prevent people from using Lysol the way he's telling them that they don't actually have to have masks. But, yeah.
That's an amazing story.
Isn't it?
A day when Georgia's had its second highest reported hospitalization. Jim, do you think there is a suppressive nature that David mentions the election to Biden with an 11-point lead, worries or thoughts at least about who might be Treasury Secretary under a Biden administration?
Well, they are building things. People are beginning to build that theory in. And I think people are struggling about which of the things that matter most. The inconsistencies of the president versus a consistent but not necessarily stock-friendly agenda of a candidate, of Biden. But we're all kind of, I think we're really vaccine, no vaccine. And today was a day that Johnson & Johnson put out some very good news about the vaccine, but they did not Moderna it, okay? And Moderna it means we're the best, we know more than everything, we're fantastic, you don't know anything. And J&J is a very non-promotional company. But what they said about doing two tests, not only for people who are, I'd say, not going to get knocked out by this thing, but the plus 65 cohort they're also going to give a test to. They've got billions of vials. They're ready to go. Moderna, I think, would be to ramp up would take forever. And yet, because the people who are gripped by day trading and gripped by the stuff that Meg Terrell talks about, it's not exciting enough. No one's buying the stock market because of J&J. They bought the stock market because of Moderna. And that's not making a lot of sense to me, frankly.
Guys, we got a lot to get to. As we said, we'll talk to James Gorman and Morgan Stanley after the break. We'll get to some of the downgrades, Peloton, Disney, Cisco. You won't believe the comps out of Domino's. And, of course, what happened at Twitter last night. We're back in a moment.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
I mentioned a moment ago, it's our job to put these bank earnings in some sort of, let's just say, so you can understand why one goes up and the others go down. Morgan Stanley posted second quarter results that blew past analyst estimates on stronger than expected trading revenue. Let's get some context here. Joining us now, first on CNBC, is Morgan Stanley Chairman and CEO James Gorman. James, it is always great to see you.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Jim. Thanks for having us.
All right, James, we have seen some terrific top line growth, much more than I thought, from almost all the banks. But a lot of that growth is credit based, and that means it's got risk. Yours is fee based, which to me is more constant and sticky. Tell us about the changes you've made and why your bank should not necessarily be valued like others.
Yeah, well, thanks for that observation. Couldn't agree more right now. But, you know, the whole business model change of the last decade was to move us into stable, recurring fee-based revenues to give us the balance. At the same time, to have a world-class investment bank, which has always been our core DNA. And this quarter, you saw exactly the combination of both of those. So, you know, we haven't been in the unsecured credit, consumer credit space. We're very small in the emerging market credit space. We're basically non-existent in small business, middle market lending. They're not the businesses we're in. They're not bad businesses, but they're not our businesses. Well, so when we produced the revenues, we didn't have the credit losses that would typically come in this kind of economic scenario.
And that's what I want to drill down on. When I looked at the provisions of the other banks that have reported, actually, they're rather large. Some people just said, Jim, we have to be conservative. But your provision is actually remarkably small versus the other banks.
Yeah, it's just business mix. I mean, if we had a large card business, for example, credit card business, we'd have provisions that would reflect that. We, you know, most of our wealth management lending is to our existing clients, highly secure, collateralized. You know, we had basically no defaults across all of that, no provisioning across all of that franchise. But that's the business model. It's with intent.
You have spoken to me many times about the idea of a wealth management business that doesn't have government risk, a wealth management business that is really sticky. So let's talk about the E-Trade acquisition. I feel in many ways that E-Trade is a feeder. It's the place where people cut their teeth. They get started. You don't want to seem to wait until people get wealthy like the old days to get an account at Morgan Stanley. Will E-Trade be part of a continuum where you get them young and then they continue to grow and you hold them all along?
Yeah, you know, I mean, listen, people find their and have their financial wealth managed in three different forums, basically. One is some sort of advice, financial planning. We've nailed that. We've got that through the combination of Smith Barney, which we built. And the last decade, that business is doing great. $2.5 trillion of assets. The second is through their place of work. It's usually on the back of a 401k type plan, stock option plan. So those kinds of businesses. And we've now got that through the Solium acquisition. And E-Trade has that, and combine those two together, we're going to be number one, I think, in the whole stock plan business in the country. The third is the digital platform. And they tend to be, as we've noted over the years, either active traders, options traders, emerging investors, and they have a younger profile. And that's what E-Trade has. So it gives us a channel into that investor base, which we didn't have before. Some of them will, over time, become full-service advisory relationships. Many of them won't, and we're agnostic to that. So it's a really terrific opportunity to participate in some of the fast growth in this segment.
Hey, James, it's David. You know, let's start on stay on E-Trade for a second. You said during the call that they've attracted hundreds of thousands of new accounts. You also said it's real money, not just kids playing, which I would assume is maybe a reference to what we've seen in this Robinhood phenomenon, this level of speculation in certain stocks in the market. What do you make of that when you say not just kids playing?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably being a bit flip and certainly not having a dig at anyone. But, you know, there's been a bunch of stuff written and you guys probably talked about a lot of people sitting at home. You know, market's going crazy. Everybody gets excited. People put their $2,000 of savings in. That's not a strategy, right? We saw that in 2000 with the dot-com thing. We're seeing a little bit of that now. E-Trade is a more mature business model than that. It has hundreds of thousands of active traders, professional traders. It has, as I said, the workplace business and people whose money goes into stock plan, vests into their E-Trade account. And then it's got the folks just who want to invest and want to have a relationship online. What's different about their business model, I think, from some of the pure electronic plays that have started up in recent years is the dollar asset per account. They're attracting several $1 billion a quarter right now, almost at the level that we are across all our wealth management business. That's what I mean by real money.
Right. When are you closing that deal?
Let's see. I think the shareholder vote with E-Trade is imminent, like today, July 17th, so it's tomorrow. Just looking at my calendar here, been a bit distracted. We hope to get Fed approval. I'm, you know, highly confident we'll get the approvals. I'm not sure the exact date, David, but somewhere in probably the first half of the fourth quarter. So it's coming really soon. And it's accretive to our deposits. It helps our funding profile and helps our CET1 ratios. So, you know, I'm really excited about this deal. I just think it's a great transaction. It was stock for stock. We've got to know their management team. I really like these folks. I think it's just culturally going to fit. It's going to be great.
James, all right, I want to switch to the financing markets, which were just incredibly strong. I want to get your take on it. But more importantly, what are your expectations for the second half of the year? It would seem almost impossible to maintain the same rate of momentum and activity that we saw for that 3 or 4 month period. Or is it possible?
No, I think it's possible. It's highly unlikely, though. And you know, I think this quarter has started off, you know, very solid, but, you know, not at the level that we're in. I'm trying to think what the most sort of ebullient month was. I guess it was April, early May. You know, still a lot of financing going on. A lot of M&A deals now getting signed up, which is interesting. That sets up, you know, it's the pipeline for next year. We won't see those revenues in the back half of this year, but we're going to see them next year. And, you know, somebody said recently, M&A doesn't go away. It just takes a hiatus in times of absolute uncertainty because CEOs don't want to commit. As the economy continues to strengthen, and as hopefully we get past the worst of COVID, although the outbreaks in the south and western parts of this country are troubling, M&A will come back more strongly. So do I think we're going to repeat the first half? No, I don't. Do I think we're going to have a poor second half? No, I don't. I think our business is very stable.
James, I was listening to Brian Sullivan this morning, and 25th anniversary of Amazon. If you put $10,000 in Amazon then, you have $12 million. Have we seen the peak?
I hope you did that, Jim.
No, well, I bought $10,000 worth of books, not stock. Yeah. Have we seen the peak in indexing? You've got great advisors. E-Trade's got a lot of interesting things to be able to help you pick individual stocks. There is great wealth being created if you bought Apple or Facebook and Amazon. But if you just bought the S&P, not so well. Are you set up for this new generation of people who are just really enthralled with individual stocks and we don't talk about them that much?
Yeah, I think, you know, we are. There's clearly a pipeline of the next generation, which is really exciting. And people want to be educated about the financial markets. We can help both in the education, the research, and obviously we bring so many companies to market. You've got pipeline, you've got flow, you've got products. But just talking about active management, I mean, I just want to give a call out to Dennis Lynch. Unbelievable, his growth funds, what he's done. Number one again this year across all of Morningstar. You know, you can create alpha through really smart long-term investing, and Dennis and his team have done an unbelievable job, and that's created enormous wealth for a lot of our clients. So There are ways to navigate these markets rather than just being an index. Now, if I've always said, if you've got $39,000 to invest, you don't mess around with individual stocks. You should be an index, and unless you're, you know, very young and you don't have financial responsibilities. But as you start developing your portfolio, you can create alpha over time, and our alts platform does that as well.
Hey, James, you were quoted on the call this morning saying that you'd love to expand the dividend in time and get back on the buyback train. We don't want to sit on this capital, you said. Can you talk about the likelihood of either of those two things happening?
Yeah, it sounds like, Carl, I can't see you guys on my screen here, but Carl, it's interesting. Our dividend is $1.40 a share. We've got $1.5 billion shares, so our total payout is about a little over $2 billion. We just earned $3 billion this quarter. At the first quarter, we're roughly $5 billion through the first half of this year. So we've made almost 2.5 years of dividends in the first half of this year. The Federal Reserve results showed we had about 300 basis points of excess capital on our CET1 ratio. We'll accrete further capital with the consolidation of E-Trade in the fourth quarter. I'm highly confident we're gonna accrete earnings in the third and fourth quarter of this year. So we're already sitting on, you know, $6 to $10 billion of excess capital. We create higher ratios with CET1 from E-Trade. We've moved, we've added another $3 billion net of our dividend already this year. So, you know, we're talking about $10 to $15 billion of excess capital. Plus, we're still arguing for some relief on the PPNR, the way, not to get too weedy about it, but the way it calculates FA compensation. So, yeah, we need to do something with this. We can invest in our business. We want to have world-class technology. We're going to invest in that. We're investing in the next generation investors that Jim's talking about. That's critical to our future growth. We also should increase our dividend, and we should be back on the buyback trail. Not just yet. Let's get through the new stress test in September. Let's see how the economy performs in the next 3-6 months. But 2021, you know, Morgan Stanley should be doing something with this capital for the benefit of our shareholders and for our clients.
James, let's talk about the growth side, because I think that no one's going to give you credit for a future dividend raise, but they should have been given credit for something you mentioned as a throwaway, which I think is one of the most exciting acquisitions you've made, which is the Solium, because that, again, is sticky assets. And we all follow the stock market here, or else you wouldn't be watching. Tell people what workplace wealth solutions mean, because that's one of my favorite businesses that you have.
Listen, it's a great question. We, you know, there was interesting story. We had a workplace business. We weren't managing it great. We outsourced it to Solium, which is a company based in Calgary in Canada. They did an unbelievable job. And I don't know if you remember the ads. I remember growing up in Australia watching Victor Kiam with the razor company. And he says, "I like the razor so much, I bought the company." And I always loved that idea. Well, Solium did such a great job managing our stock plans, we went and bought the company. And so we bought them back, paid about $300-400 million premium on the Tokyo Stock Exchange. A lot of people thought it was expensive. I could care less. It was a rounding error. What we're buying was a platform combined with E-Trade that makes us number one in the workplace. So what is workplace? It's where you have money in a stock plan or stock options and those vest. E-Trade then converts them into E-Trade accounts. We didn't. They went to whatever bank or institution somebody had a relationship with. We can then provide research. We can provide product. We can engage with the C-suite to manage their personal wealth. It's just a great growth story. A lot of money comes through where people are working, and we want to be part of that channel. Fidelity's done a great job in that space. We want to do a great job in that.
No, come on.
James,
real quickly, the world we live in right now, you know, and the world that we've been a part of, you're working from the office. I can see it. How many people are going to be working from your office, let's say, at the beginning of this year? How are you viewing things at this point?
Yeah, it's tough, David. I've been coming in a day a week for the last few weeks just to get in the flow, do the temperature tests, go through the app that we ask all our employees to do. You know, see how the elevators are working. I want to live and experience it a little bit, and I want the senior management to do that. I don't want to be here all the time. That's not because I can't be, but I don't want everybody to feel like they need to be in the office all the time. I'm not sure the infrastructure in the city and in our building can absorb the number of people that were working here pre-COVID until we have some level of immunity or treatment. Give you a sense of numbers. Up until the start of July, we had about 250 people in this building, including a lot of security and healthcare workers, on a base of 5,300. Today, we're probably, I don't know, mid-300s. We'll be, you know, 600 to 1,000, I think, through the early fall. And, you know, my long-term sort of start of the year globally is right. We'd have about 50% of our employees in the offices. Not every day of the week, but about 50% of employee hours worked would be in the offices. But, you know, a lot of ground to cover between now and then. So we're going to go really slowly, David. The plan is working well. Our people are working well.
Okay.
What I care about is them feeling safe and sound.
Unfortunately, James, we're going to have to cut short. But
no worries.
Congratulations. Good quarter. And we will talk to you soon. Got to take a break.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get to the opening bell here in just a moment. Busy morning as we've been talking about earnings from J&J, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America. Retail sales up 7.5, obviously not as good as the prior 17.7. And claims, 1.3 million, is the first rise in unadjusted claims since early April. People watching that. There's the opening bell at the NYSE Digital Media Solutions, celebrating its IPO, and at the NASDAQ, Oncology Biotech, Relay Therapeutics, also celebrating its IPO. David, interesting to hear Gorman talk about coming back to work, because yesterday Amazon, celebrating 25 years, by the way, today, said they see work from home through 2020, as did Viacom in an employee memo.
Yeah, there's a lot of companies, I think. And by the way, it's 25 years since they began the website. The company went public in 97. But you're right, Carl. Quite a few employers in New York City, and you'd imagine in other areas as well, given this is not now a New York issue at all, are delaying what was seen as the reentry of many of their employees. And Mr. Gorman seemed to indicate the same for Morgan Stanley. Really amazing when you think 5,300, they're at roughly, what did he say, a few 300 or so in the building, perhaps ramping that up to as much as 1,000 in the fall, but nowhere near capacity. It continues to be a question. And Jim, you know, we haven't talked as much about the virus of late, but it's raging in a lot of states that we know well. And we're not even near the fall and flu and cold season, when, by the way, if you were in an office environment and people start sneezing or coughing because they're sick, you're going to be overly concerned, perhaps, or very concerned, even if they don't have the COVID virus.
Look, I think, David, One thing we've seen, especially for, say, Goldman's quarter, big transactions are occurring via Zoom, some places, of course, being WebEx from Cisco. And the idea that you have to go back, I know Jamie Dimon like to go back. I know a lot of the guys at Goldman, they want to come back, but they want the bosses want people to come back, but they don't want to go back. The work from home thesis since Friday has just been in tatters. And I question whether that should be the case, given what we've seen in Florida, in Arizona, in Texas, in California. I think the work from home thesis is alive and well. We're going to be speaking to Bankit Rankeyser. David, Lysol's killing it.
Yeah.
And I just really think
Lysol
that people,
is.
It's just, people should not abandon the work from home thesis. It's too early.
No. You know, it's funny because Gorman mentioned mergers and acquisitions. There's a hope that it will pick up. At the beginning of this crisis, you guys may remember, I was referring to a slowdown there in part because of the lack of face-to-face meetings.
Right.
But like so many other things, everybody's adjusting. You heard earlier this week when we had Analog Devices on, the CEO indicated that entire deal had been done virtually. Now, he did have a relationship with the Maxim CEO, at least in some way. But I'm hearing that more and more. There is a willingness now to move forward with major transactions where none of the principals actually get in a room together, which is really amazing when you think about it, guys, but is the current reality. And to Jim, your point, it just indicates behaviors change and willingness to engage in these kinds of things changes in terms of people staying home.
And yet at the same time, the NASDAQ, where there's so much technology that's meant to be able to make it so that you can do that, whether it be the Zoom or whether it be all the cyber, we're going to have to talk about cyber attacks. It's relentless, the selling in the NASDAQ. The Dow is just doing so much better. And yet the NASDAQ is the repository of what makes it so that you can do those deals. Carl, what it shows you is, I think, right now, the market, the big buyers have had it with the idea that the NASDAQ is so much better. And when you start doing this price to sales, Peloton downgrade today, price to sales too high. People want to go back to price to earnings. But when they want to go back to price to earnings, they're not willing to go back to banks, which have the lowest price to earnings. They're kind of huddled in different areas like a Caterpillar. It's very hard to understand what people want right now, Carl. And I think that that's one of the reasons why the NASDAQ is just going to continue to go down until people say, hey, Amazon stopped. Let's go buy Microsoft. Amazon is what's telling people what to do.
Yeah, it's not a clear picture. You mentioned the Peloton downgrade out of UBS today. They cut to neutral, but they raised the target because they were at 48. They go to 58. They raised their numbers. But when you're trading at four times 2022 revenue, Jim, they say it's expensive.
People are sick of that. What do they want? They want Dollar Tree. They want Lowe's. They want the outside trade. They want Thor. Another upgrade call for a Harley Davidson. I mean, this thing, it's getting so much love. You got to believe it's going to go higher. And they really just don't have any love for FANG right now. I think that the love for FANG always seems to come back. But there is ennui. I really do think it's ennui. Instead, they're revisiting quarters that really weren't that bad where stocks went down. So, United Health being the best example. United Health had just a dynamite quarter, and people just said, you know what, they borrow from the future. And then the analysts come back today and say, wait a second, that is one cheap stock. So I'm looking for companies that are being rethought about as being cheap. I predict that Morgan Stanley tomorrow will be higher than it is today.
Interesting. Guys, I'll give you one stock that's a lot higher today than it was yesterday, and that is Dell. You know, we've talked about this previously. A few weeks ago, of course, the Journal, to give them credit, broke the story. I followed perhaps with a little bit more detail, but thought people certainly believed that likelihood was high that they were going to pursue the spinoff of VMware. Yesterday, the company essentially saying it is at least investigating that. Now, question as to why they felt the need. Well, VMware does have a 10b5 program. They do need to buy back stock. Perhaps that was part of it. They wanted information out there into the marketplace before they did this. As we pointed out at the time, guys, the transaction itself can't occur until September of 21 due to tax reasons. It's got to be at least 5 years since they actually bought the asset before they spin it off. But what will take place now and gives it what I'm hearing at least is a high likelihood of occurring is the negotiations about how you keep, how you make Dell an investment grade company. So you offload debt, but you also, or send it a big dividend from VMware that allows it to pay down a significant amount of debt. How big will it be? Could it be $12 billion, $15 billion? That will be a negotiating thing. Governance will be something that they'll have to negotiate as well in terms of whether it will they'll give up their super votes to some extent. So a lot to come here, talks with the rating agencies, but you can see the response once Dell made made public what we already had told people was the likelihood. And again, it doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it does appear to be on a track as this year moves ahead and as next year does for September of 21.
You know, David, this is one of those, again, it's driving me crazy. That thing's not going to happen for a very long time. In the interim, you're going to get several quarters. Will Dell deliver good quarters? They did take a lot of share from HP in the last one. I think VMware is doing incredibly well. It's been a little bit suppressed by this. But in a couple of days, we're going to forget that. This market has no memory even for the good. I question whether Dell can sustain this rally, given the fact that there's just tremendous selling pressure on any stock that goes up very big. Carl, we're in a weird moment. The best example is there's just a huge amount of day trading right now. And I am not against day trading. It's incredibly fun. It can be incredibly lucrative. Guys who do it, please, or women who do it, please don't get mad at me. But let's just talk about Norwegian Cruise Lines for a second. This company cannot sail. Okay, it cannot sell. It does have 22 months of liquidity. But the day traders bid this thing up furiously yesterday. So what does Norwegian do? They hit the bid for $250 million. That's exactly what you should. They just jammed the day traders. It's hilarious. They took advantage of guys who don't understand the balance sheet, Carl.
$250 million in, I think, New Common, right? And then another $900 million in debt.
Yes. Royal Caribbean. Fascinating. Memo to Richard Fain. Royal Caribbean, the day traders took you up gigantically yesterday. Go to work. Call your banker. Jam it.
Jim, you know, Boeing is the Dow laggard this morning. You got warn notices out of American now. We know United's at work on it. We got a code share between American and JetBlue for the New York area. And that's all leading to worries about overcapacity. Delta's going to keep the middle seat open beyond September. They're not giving an end date for that. So to all of this, the Disney downgrade today, saying that there's a meaningful chance that the parks could be forced to close again. Florida and California housing their two parks account for a third of the new case growth. So all of this sort of funnels into the same space.
Vaccine. Need a vaccine. Gotta have them. No choice.
We'll take a break here, guys. I think I'm hearing music. We'll talk about Twitter, of course, and the impact on that company and Facebook. And then, as Jim said, the CEO of Reckitt Benckiser, the maker of Lysol, in a market that is definitely coming in their direction. Dow's down 150.
Last week, Lysol was approved by the EPA for use against COVID-19. Joining us now is Laxman Narasimhan. He's the CEO of Reckitt Benckiser. And he's here, of course, to talk about, well, a lot of the company, a lot of the products at the company, including Lysol. Nice to have you this morning, Laxman. Thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me,
Dave. Have you seen a bump up in Lysol sales since the EPA said this is an effective way to get rid of the virus on surfaces?
I think from the time of the start of the pandemic, we have seen a lift in sales of Lysol as well as other products like Dettol. And again, it gets to consumer trust in brands like this that have been earned over a long period of time. Lysol over 140 years, ever since it was introduced, and Dettol, which is a brand, over 80 years. And these are brands available around the world. So, yes.
You know, of course, that gets us to the sales of the company, which were up sharply in the last reported quarter, as we might expect, given what you just mentioned. But the key question is, will that continue? Are people just loading their pantry with many of your products, or are you continuing to see significant increases in usage?
You know, our portfolio has been set up to capitalize on four tailwinds as we see it. The first tailwind is you know, demographic change, urbanization, globalization, that is making infectious diseases, communicable diseases, you know, quite an important thing. We, of course, couldn't have predicted this, but, you know, we have brands like Dettol, Lysol, and others that play in that space. We have a second part of our portfolio that is in the area of sexual well-being. You know, there's 1 million sexually transmitted infections every day. And Durex is a great brand, and we have a portfolio of products in that space, again, available globally. There's a third part of the portfolio that is really all around self-care. We see hospitals under pressure, medical systems under pressure. We see self-care, OTC particularly, brands like Mucinex, Nurofen, Gaviscon. These are great brands, power brands, again, available around the world. That is the third part of the portfolio. And the fourth part of the portfolio, right, we see, in fact, the need for nutrition. So Enfamil, Airborne, others like that. So that part of the portfolio is actually well set for this time. What we're seeing consumers do is there's clearly a big hygiene sensitivity. So you see a greater increase in penetration and frequency. We don't expect that to stick for a long period of time, but we do expect it to be at higher levels. We saw that happen during SARS and in MERS. We do see pantry loading, you know, products like Finish or air, people are cooking at home. Yeah. We see that. And we do see, you know, some pantry loading happen with OTC and infant, and that's playing itself out over time.
Here's a question I thought I would never ask, Laxman, which is, are people having less sex during this pandemic?
Well, let me just put it this way. This is a family show, I would imagine. The number of intimate occasions is down in a few countries because, as you think of it, the level of socialization is low. And so it has had an impact on Durex. But we have an e-commerce business that is very strong. E-commerce is about a single teens part of our entire business. In the first quarter, it grew at 50%. If you think of Durex and how it plays in the e-commerce space, it is absolutely set up for it. We have operations in 53 countries. Durex had a big quarter online. And we continue to see great progress in that direction as people look for privacy as well in this area.
Well, I'm not as interesting as David. Laxman, I don't have a dirty mind. I am holding up something, though, that is bothering me about your company. I am holding up Airborne. Now, when this pandemic started, I used to take an Airborne gummy every single day. OK, and I was thrilled to have them because I had them before. I can't get them. Now, how does it work? What's the holdup? Why can't you work 24/7? Maybe you are, so that I can get my gummies.
Jim, first of all, I'm sorry you aren't getting your gummies. Airborne's really taken off, as you can well imagine. People are concerned about immunity. Our factory in Salt Lake City is working around the clock to ensure that the gummies are in your hand. We have increased lines. We have increased capacity. Our intention is to do even more.
Well, again, but I think what I'm kind of thrown off is that there are products that you have, Lysol, for instance. I mean, I hate to say, but I can't get Lysol. I want Lysol. Now, I did hoard Lysol initially. I've gone through all my Lysol. Again, I know you probably got some factory working 24/7, but, you know, I don't get it. If we think that hygiene is important, why can't you do greenfield build in America of new Lysol plants? Because you just don't have enough Lysol. And if we're going to stay hygienic and deal with this pandemic, we need more Lysol.
So, Jim, you'll be glad to know that we are, in fact, doing just that. We have increased capacity. Just so you know, in Q1, Lysol grew over 50% year over year. We are investing in lines. We are investing in capacity. We're changing the way we work. Our first focus clearly is the protection of our people. But we are doing things as well in order to ensure that that happens. We have a factory just outside of Wuhan, that makes Dettol. We cut our SKU count by 80%. And in some SKUs, we're making 10 times what we did. If you look at the amount of sanitizer we are making, we're making 20 times the amount of sanitizer in July as we did last year. So it just gives you a sense of the demand that there is and the fact that we are responding. There's more capacity coming along every single day. And we hope that as we get into the fall, there will be even more, and there'll be more coming on next year, both the co-packers as well as lines that we're putting on that are our own. Fully get you, Jim. We want to be sure you get the gummies, and we want to be sure you get the Lysol. And we're going to work hard to make that happen.
And the sex?
Well, Jim, that's in your hands, Jim. I'm looking for you and David to really, you know, make a difference there. But the reality is that humans are humans. It's going to come back. And it is coming back in places like China.
I take responsibility for taking us there, but it was a reasonable question given the importance of some of those brands in your portfolio. But Laxman, let me talk about, you know, you mentioned digital sales, for example. You also have been an aggressive user of TikTok, for example. I think you had a campaign that had 88 billion, I think I'm reading this right, views, which seems almost hard to imagine. Is that an effective way to get to consumers? There's a lot of talk amongst this administration of potentially closing down to some extent TikTok in the U.S. I just wonder what your thoughts are about that in terms of its effectiveness as a media platform.
Well, part of the reason I'm also here today is to talk a bit about our Reckitt Global Hygiene Institute. We feel that evidence needs to be sharpened and a partnership with a range of universities that are actually going to help us get that evidence. But also, we need to communicate it in a way that people change their behavior. This is where this campaign that he talked about, the short video campaign that he talked about in India that we did. You know, it's an earworm of a song. I mean, my kids like it, but, you know, it's an earworm, 20 seconds. We thought it would be a few billion. Actually, David, the number's updated. It's 124 billion views of people learning how to wash their hands. This is as simple as that. And it gets to this notion that we have to make a difference not just in creating evidence, but also using behavioral science and insights in order to get people to behave differently. We're seeing a lot of difference in the way individuals and, by the way, groups are behaving, and we've got to fix that. And this form of making that kind of communication happen in simple, effective, engaging ways is a great way to make that happen.
And Lachman, back to sort of how you view the second half of the year and beyond. You were talking about the increases in capacity that you're focused on. How do you, though, make sure that you don't have too much out there if, in fact, we do get a vaccine and behaviors change? Or do you believe that behaviors will remain what they are now, even after, hopefully, we get a vaccine?
So first of all, we really hope we get a vaccine. We really hope we get treatment, because what's happening out there is way more important than what's happening with us. I just want to first of all say that. But in the meantime, we do have products that can actually meet what consumers need. One thing we have seen is that if behaviors change for 60 to 90 days, they actually do stick. We saw that with SARS. We saw that with MERS. I don't think you'll have the peak that you had, but you will see a change in behavior. And we are seeing that with the penetration and frequency increases we see. So as we look from now to the end of the year, you know, we're continuing to make progress, first of all, to ensure the gym gets his airborne gummies. That's a big priority. Mm-hmm. We're also ensuring that we want to ensure that all the consumers get the Lysol that they need. But at the same time, we're being thoughtful about how we expand, building in flexibility, perhaps even at higher cost, to ensure that our supply chains are resilient, to get consumers what they need, but at the same time having some flexibility as we go.
All right, so Lachman, you've got this, the Reckitt Global Hygiene Institute, which is absolutely terrific. But while we've interviewed you, I got an email from Uber. It says Uber is now Clorox clean, looking for disinfecting wipes in your next ride. This is not unusual. They've also done this with airlines. When is Reckitt Global Hygiene Institute going to be able to say, like Ben Odor has been doing, that, look, it's Lysol clean? Because this is a great new business.
If you look at the work that we've done with the Hilton chain, you know, with the combination of Mayo Clinic, Hilton, and us, Chris Nassetta made an announcement of Hilton stay. You know, it's a stay program with Hilton, endorsed by Lysol. We have made a variety of other announcements as well. Avis, for example, will be Lysol free or Lysol clean. If you look at a variety of organizations around the world, we're not prepared to announce them yet, but there's several others that we're in deep discussions with. And we believe that Lysol has the trust credentials to help get to the anxiety that consumers feel. That we're in a hotel with the Hilton brand name on it. They know it's been cleaned, and Lysol has provided that kind of trust mark for them.
Lachman, really appreciate you taking some time with us today and all the different places that this interview went. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, David. And Jim, my son's a fan, so I'll ensure I let him know that... you know, that I saw you, and we'll just be sure
we
get the guys you need. Good stuff. Yeah, booyah. Take care.
Thank you.
You never know if you don't ask, David. In the meantime, we briefly took out yesterday's low on the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P, holding 3211, though. We're back in just a minute. Rough 24 hours for Twitter as that unprecedented hack disables many accounts last night, although market seems to be taking it in stride, really no lower than it was a couple of days ago. We'll talk with Robert Herjavec later on this morning about cybersecurity and how it pertains to social media these days. That's coming up. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
This Twitter hack not talked enough about. I've got to tell you, I think you need an outfit like a Palo Alto Network, which is Nikesh Arora. Come in. We've got to figure out whether this is nation state chaos, particularly ahead of an election. We got to find out about that. Or whether they got 50, 75 passwords. We don't know. We probably haven't seen the end of this. No matter what, you got to bring in cybersecurity. This is way too big for Twitter. And we do not want nation state ahead of an election.
Does it sour you on Twitter in general, Jim?
No, I just feel that because Twitter's, I think, has become very, it's not farcical, but it's light. But I don't like the fact that, it was so maybe they've got a couple people inside. I don't know. But I think that the company is much more of a it's more of a it needs something. It needs sports to go with it. It's not a place that people are talking right now is what I would say. And this doesn't help. Not sure. At all.
Well, we hope to learn more from Twitter support tonight. So to Palo Alto tonight, right?
No, I wish it were. Nikesh, if you're out there, why don't you come on and explain what to do? I've got Mark Bristow. Barrick is just an incredible stock. Noah Kerner, we've got a very special program tonight. I'm part of it. Noah Kerner, Acorns, a great way to save. Rich Allison, Domino's, some of the greatest comp stores in history. Nikesh, I'm counting on you. I'll find room because this hack was a bam. David? No, never mind.
Yes. It was bad. It was a bad hack, Jim. It was.
They hacked you. They hacked your brain.
No, they didn't.
We'll see you tonight, Jim.
Mad Money. Completely reasonable question.
Eastern time.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.